Hey, look at that. You get me twice in a row. Don't forget to do the social media, though. So today, we have to do a lot of disclaimers. We have a cryptocurrency guy come on, Sahar Abrams. I believe I said that correctly. He corrects me during the show. So disclaimer time. This is purely educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not act on anything we recommend. Risk only that you can afford to lose. We are not your fiduciary, blah, blah, blah. If you bust, it's not our fault. So with that, let's enjoy, Suhar's, chat about crypto. He claims it can save the world and fix global warming. Who knows? He may be right. Let's begin.
Welcome to the Josh Bolton Show, where we dive into interesting and inspiring conversations. And now, your host, Josh Bolton.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hi, I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing pretty good, too. How's your Monday going?
Good. It's sort of just starting.
What time is it over there for you?
Noon.
Oh, okay. East Coast.
I'm on Eastern time.
So you're just rolling out of bed at noon?
That's kind of normal for me nowadays. Yeah. Kind of now that I make my own schedule, it's kind of what I tend towards.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Interesting. So what is it? Because I was reading up on you. You were doing a lot of consulting with like IBM, this and that. What are you doing currently?
Yeah, so I worked at IBM for a number of years, and for the last couple of years in the blockchain practice. But I was always very, very into crypto, and I sort of did well enough that, you know, I quit at the beginning of this year.
Okay.
In order to kind of really do full-time crypto and, you know, focus more on education and, I don't know, just start building my own stuff. Thing with consulting is you're always working for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And especially the type of consulting I was doing, which is government consulting, that somebody else sometimes is
not willing to listen.
They just passionate about what you might be doing. It wasn't bad, you know, it was a good job. I think I was just a little burned out, and it was kind of right time for me to try something else. I don't think of myself as like retired. I don't think I could be retired.
Oh, so you strike me as the guy is like, he'll just go to something else.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm trying this out, and I may kind of try to become like more of a professional investor. I've been talking to some like VC companies, and kind of like advising them. So that could be kind of my next project once I finish kind of what I'm doing now, launch the online course I've been working on, which is very close.
Okay.
Then, you know, I'll can think about what's next. It's an interesting situation to be in.
It sounds like it's where you're not like completely struggling for cash, but you're not in a hurry to get more kind of thing.
I don't know how like to, I'm trying to like figure out how I think about money now. I always had, goals kind of all oriented towards, finances, like getting a certain amount of money. And, you know, now that I reached those goals, like a lot sooner than I thought, it's kind of like, it's just like a, what do you do now? And I kind of realized they were sort of arbitrary. And
yeah.
So
some of them are useful to structure you, but some of them, like you said, are very arbitrary. It's like you didn't actually have to hit that.
Yeah. It's just that you don't like feel any different. You know, you don't get taller. You don't get really happier. It's just, but you know, you don't have to like worry about shit, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And I think, I read something good in a book that's, you know, having, the best part about having money is just like what it makes you not have to do, not what you can do, but just what like you don't have to do.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of rings true. It's part of the reason. I mean, I have really good passive income through crypto, and that's one of the things that I really am trying to teach, because I think, you know, passive income investing is the way to go, is like the path towards true wealth and freedom.
Right.
That's kind of what enabled me to, you know, kind of have the freedom that I do, is not having a certain amount of money, but having a passive income stream. And crypto kind of makes it easier, you know, to participate in passive income, you know, and you can start with any amount. Just a few years ago, you know, I was earning just a few dollars a week, right, in passive income.
Right.
The great thing about crypto is it makes it super accessible to start participating, start earning passive income, and then building your income streams. And you can participate in various sort of passive income streams depending on the level of risk you want to take. For instance, there are very kind of set and forget ways with almost no risk to earn passive income. And then there are ways that require, you know, like yield farming, that require a lot more kind of attention and management. So it's kind of the amount of time and effort you want to put into it. But, you know, with yield farming, you can be compounding at triple digit APY, you know, and you can do that pretty consistently. So that's a heck of an opportunity. And, you know, I want to, I think it's, you know, just one of the best kept secrets in the world right now.
Yeah.
And so, that's part of what I'm trying to teach. But before you get to yield farming, you have to first kind of understand, not necessarily master, but understand, you know, the more fundamental concepts and how to think about investing, how to think about risk, how to think about portfolio construction, all these things. So that's, that's kind of the direction I tried to go in with the course, is covering kind of all of that and then bringing you up to the point where you can confidently, you know, participate in these different passive income streams and confidently invest, right, and participate in the crypto market without, you know, worrying that you're going to make some terrible mistake.
Right.
Which unfortunately, you know, many people do, including me. I made my share of mistakes early on, you know, and I sort of had to learn the hard way. I think sharing what I know is, and helping other people kind of in their journey is meaningful to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Some of my buddies at work that I came from, they're all into crypto, but they were all buying the shit coins. And I was just like, guys, this is like penny stocks. This is really high risk, high reward.
Yeah, it's exactly like penny stocks. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, but it's like Dogecoin. I'm like, that was a one in like a trillion chance. That was literally the lottery kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I tell people, you know, that ask me about Dogecoin. I had a lot of people ask me about Dogecoin a few months ago, right? And I said, you know, just go, you know, go take your money to, you know, Vegas and just put it on black, and, you know, at least that way it'll be over quicker.
Yeah.
You'll just, when you're, and that's not to say, you know, you could have an investment thesis on Dogecoin. And if you do, and if you, you know, have kind of defined your risk on that sort of position, then maybe that can be fine. Right. But 99.9% of people aren't doing that. 99.9% of Dogecoin investors, you know, they didn't have any sort of plan. Right.
Yeah. It was completely
like, well, it's going to hit a dollar because Elon said it's going to hit a dollar.
It never did it.
What'd you say?
It never did it?
It never did. No, it got up to like 65 cents.
Yeah.
Which is still quite incredible.
Considering it's a joke coin.
I actually got in, you know, at like the perfect time to Dogecoin. I mean, I'd been, when you're in, you know, after you've been in crypto for a while, and I'd seen like the pump cycle of Dogecoin play out several times. So you kind of just learn like when Dogecoin is super cheap, you kind of just buy it and then you just wait patiently until it just pumps, you know, 300%, and then you sell it and then wait for it to come back down and rinse, repeat. And it's super easy, right?
Right.
If you look at the chart of Dogecoin, right, it's you can rinse, repeat. You could rinse, repeat that, you know, over between, you know, 2017 and 2020. You could have done that. Would have been a consistent strategy, right? But then this time, you know, it just kind of pumped and then it kept going. So, you know, I had kind of entered, you know, I had, again, you know, defined my risk on it and did sort of a trade, right? And I bought, you know, a large amount of Dogecoin, you know, at probably less than a cent. And then I sold it, I think, at like 6 cents.
Oh, I was God, like, that's this huge is... returns.
Yeah, which was great. I was like, well, you know, that's a, you know, there's a killer trade by any metric. Like I'm, you know, I'm out, you know, I'm happy. It's going to dump back down. And then it, you know, it kept going another 10X. And, but, you know, I've learned my lesson, right? In the beginning, I probably would have FOMO'd back in and then gotten crushed, you know, when it did eventually crash. But I was able to, you know, kind of dispassionately just be like, well, you know, I can be happy with the results, right? I made a profit. I'm not going to, you know, succumb to FOMO. And, you know, that's something I, you know, I do mostly investing, but I also enjoy trading. And I find trading super, super interesting because it's all about mental discipline. And, you know, that's something that I've definitely improved. I've had a really, really great trading year this whole year.
Oh yeah. This year has been great for trading.
Yeah. And I only trade crypto. I, you know, I want to be clear, like I only do crypto because, and the reason for that is, you know, I realized that, when I started taking investing, you know, really seriously, I realized that I didn't have an edge in the stock market. Like
right.
anything, you know, I could tell myself, oh, I know, you know, I need to buy, you know, this or that. But really, you know, it was sort of just guesswork. Like I didn't know better than, I didn't feel like I had an advantage over, you know, the guys that were doing it full time, you know, on Wall Street, for instance.
Yeah. They're making hundreds of millions a year.
Yeah. They have, you know, hundreds of millions in resources. They have people doing it full time. They can pick up the phone and, you know, be talking to any CEO that they want in an instant. Mm-hmm. Like you can't do that, right? How do you think you're going to beat those guys? Right.
You can't.
And you know, and some people maybe do have an edge there, but I think I, you know, it was a big step for me, you know, to recognize I don't have an edge in this market and I'm not going to, you know, I, there's no reason for me to, you know, put my capital to work there in that sense. So, and you know, instead I focused on where I believed I did have an edge, which was crypto. And, you know, that worked out quite well for me. I, you know, outperformed Bitcoin and Ethereum. Which I think that's the, you know, litmus test for any serious crypto investor is, you know, you should be denominating, you know, in Bitcoin or Ethereum. So if you're a, you know, crypto investor and, you know, you're watching your portfolio against USD, I would say, you know, one of my first tips is, you know, kind of change that mindset, or, you know, denominate against Bitcoin or against Ethereum, because those are sort of the least risky crypto assets you can invest in. Right. So if you're not beating the return of the least risky asset in the market, then you're really just taking additional risk for not a better return. And that's not, you know, you don't want to be doing that. Right. Also denominating against those two coins, which perform very, very well. Right. They beat USD, allows you to sort of be more discerning as well and find really the best crypto. It's easy to find a crypto that's beaten the US dollar. It's a lot harder to find a crypto that's beaten Bitcoin or Ethereum over a meaningful amount of time.
So I have actually a few questions, but I want you to introduce yourself because I want to keep this train going.
Sure.
So
yeah, I wasn't sure if we had even started yet.
I had a report and everything, but that's actually really good. I'm like, let's keep it going.
Okay.
Just get you water and tell everyone who you are and like. So is it Suthar? Sathar?
No. it's Shahar.
I would never guess that.
Shahar. Yeah, it's a Hebrew name. So it's very different. Hebrew is in the throat. So you should feel discomfort in your throat as you say the name. That's how you know you're doing.
Shahar. Yeah, I think I still said it wrong. But so tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do. And I'm actually interested because I've been listening recently on different shows about the stablecoin versus Bitcoin now. I want you to hear your take on that.
Oh, sure. So I, you know, I studied finance in college. I've always been really interested in markets, and in investing. But you know, I was sort of just doing it passively. I didn't really, you know, I didn't really have a drive to kind of be active. And I think that's because there wasn't anything in kind of the stock market I was really passionate about or had enough of an interest in to really go deep enough, like I said, to believe like I really had an advantage. And so that started to change in 2016. I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which hopefully, you know, many listeners have heard of. Great, you know, fantastic book. Part of really like the canon of like personal finance, in my opinion. That book really got me thinking in a different way about personal finance, specifically, you know, about, you know, passive income, right? Like I said before, I think true wealth is passive income, right? It's earning money independent of time. When you can do that, that, you know, translates to real wealth. You no longer have to sell your money for time. And so how you do that, Robert Kiyosaki in the book, you know, puts out this idea of you simply buy assets that put money into your pocket, right? And he mm-hmm. defines, you know, the idea of an asset as something that puts money in your pocket, something that can generate passive income for you. So this got me kind of, you know, renewed my interest in kind of investing and more active investing. But for a while, I still didn't know, you know, I still didn't really feel like a connection with anything or, you know, wasn't going that deep. But then in 2017, first learned about Bitcoin. I had known about it, but I hadn't taken the time to really understand it and understand kind of the point behind it and the thesis behind it, right? So in, you know, like early 2017, I finally, you know, got a book that had, you know, the Satoshi white paper from 08 in it. And instantly it sort of clicked for me, you know, this not just Bitcoin, but the technology in general, the breakthrough in the technology, right, is, you know, solving a massive problem that we have in society, which is trust on the internet, right? You know, trust and security, right? I think the two biggest problems with the internet right now. And these two problems are directly addressed by crypto. And arguably, that's what it grew out of, right? So that got me, you know, instantly hooked. And I knew kind of right away, I wanted to work on this tech, you know, for my career, right? I started investing in it, did really well, obviously, in 17, because everyone did, right? But I didn't know what I was doing. Like you said, I bought a bunch of shit coins, right? I kept some Bitcoin, but I also had a bunch of other random stuff. And, you know, it all went up, you know, at the end of 2017, because it was just kind of the end of that bull market cycle. But, you know, because I didn't really know anything, I just sort of held on and lost all of that the following 2 years, right? And that was a really painful experience, right? But it really motivated me to kind of get better. It made me realize, you know, that I didn't really know what I was doing and I needed to really improve if I wanted to stay in the game. So over the next 2 years, I, you know, really devoured all sorts of literature and talks, videos, all sorts of stuff about personal finance, trading, investing, and crypto, right? I went really, really deep into crypto. By the end of 2018, I started working at IBM in our blockchain practice, which, you know, blockchain is the tech behind crypto, the tech that kind of contributes trust in a big way. So we were doing that for enterprises and for kind of government agencies, because that's the area of consulting that I was in. Mm-hmm. And so that was really interesting. That gave me a lot of insight into, you know, how you think about really investing, like making investments in the tech, because what makes a good use case, what makes a good kind of blockchain project, right? And what doesn't. So, you know, by the end, you know, through 2018 and 2019, as I continued to learn and level up my knowledge and grow kind of as an investor, I, you know, eventually made the decision, you know, to kind of put all of my investment capital into crypto, where I felt like I had an edge, as opposed to, you know, having money in the stock market. And, you know, something I read about, you know, good investors, right? They find the asymmetric risk reward opportunities and they just bet big on those, right? When you find a good asymmetric opportunity, like when you have, you know, the best odds, perhaps like at the blackjack table, the dealer is showing a five or the dealer is showing a six, right? If you could, you'd double down, right? So same sort of idea. Then, like I said, you know, at the end of 2021, or sorry, at the end of 2020, I had sort of done well enough to, you know, focus more on what I wanted to do, which is, you know, help share my knowledge about crypto. I had lots of friends and old contacts, you know, asking me about it, asking me for advice. And I wanted to create a more structured way to kind of share that and share what I've learned. And so what I decided to do is an online course. I've been working on that for close to a year. And the idea with my course, right, is to really cut through the hype, right, and help people get confident, you know, in participating in crypto. So that's kind of me and my background. You asked about, you know, Bitcoin versus stablecoin. So we can kind of talk about different sorts of crypto assets. The idea, you know, of a stablecoin, right? So what they have in common, sorry about that. What they have in common is, you know, they're both payment coins, right? So all you can really do with them is you send a payment. You send them from one address to another, from right. one place to another. Bitcoin, though, is, you know, a volatile asset, right? Its value is kind of indeterminate, right? It's what the market thinks, it's how many people are using it, supply versus demand. Whereas a stablecoin is what we call, you know, pegged to a certain other asset. Right. So you could have a Chinese yuan stablecoin, you could have a US dollar stablecoin, you could even have a silver or a gold stablecoin, right? And those exist, right? If you want crypto exposure to gold, you can buy a stablecoin that tracks the value of gold. And how does it do that? Well, there's literally a troy ounce of gold in a vault somewhere backing each one of these coins, right? And it gets audited and the audits are published. And so, you know, that you can trust it. And that's how many stable, you know, US dollar stable coins work as well. You'll have a company like Circle, right, is one of the biggest ones for USDC that, you know, every time they get dollar deposits, they'll mint some stable coins. And then when you redeem your stable coins, right, they, you know, they give you the dollars, right, and they burn those coins, right?
Right.
And so this way they always keep, you know, a one-to-one or very close to one-to-one ratio of, you know, hard cash to the stable coins that they've issued. Right. And once again, they, you know, they publish audits every month. You can go on their website and look at that. And the great thing about stable coins is that, you know, they're just way better, right? Because they move natively on the internet, right? Mm-hmm. They move natively online. You can send them like you send a text message, like you send other crypto. And that makes them far, far more efficient, right, than normal US dollars that have to go through, you know, the SWIFT banking system and interbank settlement. And, you know, that's why if you ever wonder why it takes, you know, several days for you to transfer money from one bank to another is because the banks have to talk each other and they have to reconcile. And at the bottom line is, right, they can't natively trust each other because they're using kind of different systems and they have different databases. So crypto solves that problem, right? And stablecoins, for instance, solve that problem. You can send them and there's a public ledger. There's a public record of the transactions that we can all check, right? And so you don't need a bank, right, to do that. So when I, you know, send my money around now in crypto, I wait a few seconds or a few minutes, right? And I can follow it the whole way. So that level of trust and transparency and control is really incredible. And I think once you start using it, once you start doing it, it's hard to go back. It's hard to go back to the traditional way of, you know, I'm going to send my money into some black hole and hope it comes out the other end and wait, you know, 5 days in the meantime. I just can't go back to that.
Yeah. I know a few people that work the banking system and they're like, yeah, there's like, they get involved, check their system. Then they have to talk to the government to make sure it's okay. Oh, yeah. Then they go to the other bank. Then they have to talk to the government to make sure it's okay. And it's just one of those like, one of the biggest things.
And that's all friction that we all pay for, right? Oh, yeah. The banks passed on that cost to us. And the last important point I want to make about on stablecoins, right, is because of those differences that I described in efficiency, control, and ease of use, right? Stablecoin, when you keep your money in a bank, right? If you keep dollars in a bank, what do you get paid? Like 0.1%, you know, 0.5%, maybe if you're lucky, right?
of interest, right? It doesn't even, it's a joke, right? It doesn't even keep up with inflation, not even close, right? The bank's making way more money than that on your money, mm-hmm. right? But they're just not paying you any of it. But with stable coins, right? You can today take your dollars out of your bank. It'll take a few days, but you'll get them out of your bank. You'll put them on a platform like Coinbase. You'll convert them for free, one-to-one, to a stable coin, perhaps US dollar coin. The one I described was backed by Circle. And then you can take your US dollar coin, send a transaction, which might cost a dollar or two, to a crypto wallet that pays you interest, right? And what interest do they pay you? They pay you, right now, I'm earning about 9% on my US dollar stable coins. So while most people, you know, are earning 0.1% at their bank for holding their money there and then get terrible service and are charged fees, right? I'm, you know, by using crypto, right? I'm holding those same assets, US dollars, but earning 9% and having complete control and flexibility and no fees, right? On the platform that I use. So that's incredibly powerful. And it doesn't, and you can do this with $1.
Yeah. Right? And that's actually one thing. So you were mentioning it earlier, how Bitcoin's extremely volatile, because one of my buddies at work, he got in and it was one of those, he's like, I don't understand. I'm like, I'm losing hundreds as we speak. And I told him, like, did you buy right at the top kind of thing? So he showed me his chart. I'm like, dude, you bought right at the top kind of thing. This is a hype coin kind of thing. Like, it's only as good as the hype.
Well, you know what, though? That's true for every market.
Oh, yeah.
Hype is always a part of the market. It's just, you know, all markets are psychology, right? And we've had these sort of hype cycles and markets going back since the beginning of markets, mm-hmm. right? People get excited and they let, when you let your emotion kind of get the better of you as an investor and you go in without a plan or a thesis, you know, that's what happens, right? And like I described before, you know, I learned that the hard way too. Right. Most people have to learn it the hard way and hopefully they learn. What happens is a lot of people have that experience and maybe they lose a lot of money and they feel like, well, I can't do this. This isn't for me. And then they just kind of walk away. Right. And they don't invest. And that's really unfortunate. Right. Because, you know, investing is right. How you get to retirement. It's how you can get to financial freedom, passive income. Right. It's super, super important. The idea of making your money work for you. So, you know, if that's happened to you, right. And I'm, you know, it's happened to lots of people, you know, don't be discouraged, right. Try and learn from that. And, next time, you know, come in with a little bit more, you know, having thought it through. If your idea for like, I'm going to buy something just occurred to you, like in one day, like maybe wait on it. Right.
Yeah.
Everything I invest in now, right there, I am not spur of the moment, right? I know what I'm, you know, I have a plan on every asset, right? So yeah, you know, volatility is inescapable. And the truth is Bitcoin is not actually more volatile than many, you know, stocks in the stock market, even in the S&P 500, right? There are stocks that are, frankly, more volatile than Bitcoin. Maybe not than other cryptos, right? But still, you know, I don't think the volatility in the stock market is that much greater than crypto. So I don't think, you know, I don't think you should ascribe more risk to crypto than to kind of the traditional stock market. They're both, you know, risk assets, of course, but I don't think, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, crypto is way too risky. I don't think it's much riskier than the stock market.
Right. No, that's where what I was asking and leading with the stable coin is your interest. It's like, so that it would that be your the simplest, just leave it and walk away. You don't have to worry about it one.
Absolutely. So for what I described, you know, earning 9% is an app you can download today for those interested. The one that I use called Celsius Network, and I've used them for over 2 years. They pay you interest every week. And for over it's actually been almost 3 years now. So for close to, you know, 150 weeks, I've never missed an interest payment. Every week I get an email, you've earned this much passive income on your crypto assets, right? And you can earn on Bitcoin, you can earn on Ethereum, you can earn on Polkadot, on Cardano, on Litecoin, Zcash. They support over 40 different cryptos, of the largest different cryptos. And for each crypto asset, they pay you, you know, almost as much yield as they make, right? They keep some to remain, you know, in business and remain profitable. They pay you about 80%. So on Ethereum, you know, I earn 5%. On Bitcoin, you can earn up to 6%. Some other coins are over 10%, depending on, you know, how much yield you can generate from the coin. And stable coins, like I mentioned, which are riskless, just about, right? Same thing as having dollars at your bank, right? Those pay 9%. And there's never, you know, in this new world, right, that we're building crypto, right? There's no such thing as, you know, lockup, holding period, you know, hidden fees, like, you know, terrible customer service or having to wait, right? It's really an incredible new world, right? And it's available today. And people that participate in it, right, they are, I've never really met anyone, to be honest, that has been participating in crypto and then goes back. And it's like, you know what, this, it just isn't for me. The system like isn't working for me, right? As long as you, you know, are keeping your stuff safe, right? You don't lose your crypto in some accident that has, you know, bad impact on you. And you know, the security to do's, which is another thing, you know, I cover in depth, then, you know, you're going to have a good time, right? And you're going to find that this system, this internet of value that we're building on the backbone of crypto, right, is a whole new paradigm, right? A whole new world with much, much better service, much, you know, more transparent, more fair, and with incredible opportunity.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I was just, that was the one thing a while ago. I thought about getting into, like, get a Coinbase, buy the coins, then transfer it to someone else so I'd get the interest. But then the reason I kind of kicked it back, I thoroughly believe blockchain and Bitcoin's like the future. I'm not sure about NFTs. That one's a little...
Oh, man, NFTs are just getting started.
They are? All right.
Oh, yeah.
So then the thesis for me, for the reason I kicked back, is the moment I made my account with Coinbase, the servers went down for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those. I'm like,
what? So Coinbase is not, you know, Coinbase is built on traditional infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. Coinbase isn't built on top of Ethereum or on top of, you know, Solana or one of these other, you know, blockchain based infrastructure layers. So Coinbase has kind of those same problems. You know, it's a centralized exchange and it just acts as an on-ramp into crypto, right? So, yes, you know, Coinbase has, you know, and they have, I think, over, you know, 40, 50 million users. I forget, you know, they reported recently, actually, but they have an incredible, you know, user base that's really growing. And so they have, you know, they're having growing pains. But, you know, for instance, if you were using crypto native applications, perhaps, so for example of a crypto native exchange application is Uniswap, maybe some people have heard of, right? That's an exchange application that is totally peer-to-peer. There is no kind of centralized server company behind it. And that doesn't go down, right? It never goes down. It's always up. It's always running. Sometimes you have to pay a lot to use it, right? When there's high demand for it, you know, the network fees can be significant. So you do have to consider that, but it is, you know, totally reliable, right? Because it's just an automated platform. It's just a bunch of code, right? There's no person behind the, you know, behind the, you know, one-way mirror, you know, having to do stuff, right? It's an automated protocol, right? It's a protocol.
Right. Yeah. That was just the only thing when I got into Coinbase. Because that's when everyone was like, oh my God, Bitcoin's like 60,000. And I was just like, oh, okay, you know, I got like $100. I'll like throw $100. I know it's not going to feel the rush of the amount. And then that's when Coinbase went down. I'm like, oh, okay. This goes down a lot, apparently. And one of the guys like, yeah, it's normal. It's okay. And I'm like, I want something that's consistent. We're going to play this game. I want something that's not going to pull this stuff on me.
So, you know, for getting, you know, your first crypto, I do recommend using something like Coinbase. And you don't need it to really stay up for long. If you're just buying, right, you buy it on there, unless you're, you know, trying to actively trade, you don't really care, right, about that. And what I recommend, you know, is people buy their crypto, right, on an on-ramp like Coinbase or Kraken or something like that.
and then transfer it into their a different wallet, right? That they control, or that's custodied by someone that pays you interest, right? Because everyone that's leaving their coins on Coinbase, right, is just missing out on passive income that they could be earning, right?
Right.
Like I said before, anybody can earn passive income on their crypto right now today. And you can get started, and it compounds, right? That don't underestimate the power of compounding returns, right? So if you have some Bitcoin and maybe you don't have much, you can deposit into this app, Celsius Network, right? And you can start earning 6% per year, right? At 6% per year, you're doubling your money about every 11 years, right? And that is regardless of what Bitcoin does. So even if Bitcoin stays the exact same price, you know, you'll be compounding your Bitcoin position, right? They pay you interest in Bitcoin, right? On your Bitcoin, right? You'll be compounding that at a rate of 6% per year. And then if Bitcoin, you know, goes up by, 6% per year, which by the way, its average is like 150% per year. You're doubling your money, you know, every 5.5 years, right? So that's really, really powerful, right? And everyone can, you know, get started doing that today. If you want to learn, you know, a lot more about it, you know, you should check out my website and my course that's upcoming, because I really go deep into that. It's something I'm very passionate about and have been, studying and involved in for a number of years now. This is what the space really has to offer. And then if you want to go deeper, right, you can use these other protocols like Uniswap, to trade on that, on a platform that's never going to go down, right? That's never going to have, you know, a denial of service or anything like that. That's never going to delist an asset, right? And you can also use those protocols, by the way, to earn even more passive income, right? Through what we call liquidity farming. In my liquidity farming activities, I'm earning closer to, 150% per year. Right. So at 150% per year, your money is doubling three quarters of a year or so. Right. So that's incredibly. Now, there's risk there. Right. You have to know what you're doing. It's an incredible opportunity. Right. For people that really want to, put themselves on a faster track towards retirement or towards financial independence or financial freedom.
So I'm just curious for you, two things. First one, does everyone have to pay for your classes in crypto?
No, it wouldn't be a great intro crypto class if I made everyone pay.
I was so just one of those. I'm like, I'm just curious.
I will take your crappy US dollars and I'll probably convert them to crypto myself. But
The second one is the biggest one I don't like about at least Bitcoin itself. Is the environmental effect.
I knew that was coming. Yeah. Well, all right. Let me sort of blow your mind on that. Let me flip this on its head, because I've talked to a lot of people about this too. So it's true that Bitcoin uses a lot of energy, right? It uses a lot of energy, about as much energy as something like Ireland right now.
Right.
And it's probably going to increase. Right. But you have to ask, right, what are we getting for this energy? Because we use energy all the time. Right. And what we're getting is the single most secure, independent, decentralized, immutable record of data that we've ever created in the history of the world, right? There's never been a more secure way to record data than the Bitcoin blockchain, because it's literally protected by all of this energy expenditure. So that's number one. So it's not, so to say it's a waste of energy is very subjective. You're saying, well, I don't value, the fact that we have this completely secure, decentralized way of storing data that lets us, use money without the need for a bank or a central government, right? Which is fine if you don't value that. But it's not a waste of energy, all right? We are getting something really big for that energy. Two, more importantly, the average, renewable energy usage in the United States is around 20, 21, 25%, right? So the average, industry is maybe using about 25% renewables. In a survey that was done by Cambridge last year, they found that Bitcoin right now is in fact close to 40% renewable, okay?
Mm-hmm. So Bitcoin mining is in fact cleaner than the average industry in the US. Okay, so a lot of people don't realize that, but it's true. The number one most used energy source for Bitcoin mining is hydroelectric power, okay, which is very clean and renewable, sustainable, yeah. Right? And what's more, right, that trend, the trend has been up, okay? So when Cambridge did the same study in 2018, it was, you know, maybe like 31%, 28%. Don't remember the number exactly, but around like 28% renewable. And 2 years later, we're close to 40% renewable. Mm-hmm. So it's trending up. And why is that? Well, it's because that the way that Bitcoin works, it provides a direct incentive for you to find the lowest cost energy, right? If you're going to try mining it, right, which is what mining is, you know, briefly, is you're participating in the validation of transactions on the network, mm-hmm. right? So you're helping maintain the public record that allows it to work. And that's where you expend energy. If you're doing that, right, your only cost input is energy. So what are you going to do? You're going to be incredibly motivated and incentivized to find the lowest cost of energy. And typically, the lowest cost, you know, best kind of energy sources are renewable energy sources. So Bitcoin is creating, it's kind of, you know, been the government's and the UN's like wet dream for a long time, right, to create this natural global incentive for companies, for people to find lowest cost of energy. And Bitcoin is doing this right now, today, in real time. And what we're seeing is it move more and more towards renewables, especially here in the US. There are a lot of new mining companies that have started this past year in the US, right, that are really focused on using renewable energy, right? And they're going to publish, you know, all of their energy sources that you use, and you can see, right, how much clean energy is going into it. So I think we're going to see a big acceleration of clean energy usage in Bitcoin over the next years, just like we have in the past. And lastly, and this is really the blow your mind sort of point that, you know, flips all this on its head, I would argue that Bitcoin, in fact, and crypto mining, in fact, might be the thing that takes us to a renewable energy future. And the reason for that is kind of what I mentioned before, right? Creating this natural market incentive to find low cost of energy. Guess what? That provides a great incentive for innovation in the renewable energy space. And not only that, right? So renewable energy often its biggest problem, right? If you're starting a renewable energy project, you want to put up a bunch of, you know, solar panels somewhere in Texas, right? And generate great, you know, clean renewable energy. Your biggest hurdle is how are you going to sell that energy? Right? Because you have to integrate with the grid, and then you have to match up your energy with the demand of the grid. So the demand of the grid, right, is demand's highest, you know, just after work, right? You know, between like 5 and 9, right? Pretty consistently. Guess what? That's not when the sun is shining the brightest, mm-hmm. right? So big problem with renewables is you can't control, you know, when the sun is out. You can't control when it's going to be windy, right? But the demand of the grid is very consistent. And storing energy is very hard, right?
It is.
And transporting energy is very hard, right? You lose a lot kind of in that process. So every kind of renewable energy project, you know, to get funding and to get investment has to overcome these hurdles of, you know, how are we going to be profitable, right? How are we going to make a return on investment, you know, when we can't sell to the grid all the time and we're losing, you know, a lot of energy. So the vast majority of energy, you know, generated in these sort of solar plants, for instance, you know, ends up being wasted because you can't store it, you can't move it. And if there's not demand for it, you know, when it's generated, you know, it just kind of goes away. Now, what crypto mining can do about this is crypto mining basically becomes the buyer of last resort for this unused energy, right? So now you have your solar plant, right? And you're generating lots of energy at 8 a.m, but nobody, you know, really needs that energy. You're generating more than you need. Well, you put the rest of it into crypto mining, right? And you use that energy to mine, say, Bitcoin, right? And you can earn money on your unused energy, right? Bitcoin is almost tokenized energy, right? It's a way to store energy as money in this sense, right? And so now if you can do that, all of a sudden, it totally changes the return on investment, you know, calculations for renewable projects. Suddenly you can say, well, I want to do a renewable project. And yeah, we don't know, you know, how much energy we're going to be able to generate like right away. We don't know
you know, when we're going to be able to sell to the grid. But hey, when we can't, we know we can at least mine Bitcoin. And so we can at least, you know, make some of that money back. And so what you're going to see, you know, I think, and what we're already seeing, in fact, is investments in new renewable energies that are driven and enabled by crypto mining. And so in this way, you know, I think it's really important to understand, because I think, you know, people and politicians that don't know, you know, the tech at all, right, that feel the need to talk about it, right, they paint it as this big, you know, threat to, you know, environmentalism and climate change and all these things that I really care about too, right, and we should all care about. And unfortunately, like, I think that they have it totally wrong, right? They should be encouraging this, encouraging, you know, doing it in a responsible way, because it actually could be the thing that saves us from that future, in my opinion. And, you know, if we get it wrong and we really have this, we allow ourselves to have this knee-jerk reaction, you know, we can really ruin that opportunity. So I think it's really important to understand that kind of thing.
So for me, it was the, I didn't put two and two together when you said, if you don't use the energy, your computer can mine it for you. I didn't think about that. I'm like, okay, yeah, then technically you're not wasting, but you're not like consuming too much kind of thing.
Yeah. You're basically, I think it's a good way to think about it as a buyer of last resort, right? When no one else will buy your energy from you, and you're just going to lose it, well, you can start mining Bitcoin with it. And you're, in fact, you know, you're contributing to the security of the Bitcoin network. And more importantly for you, right, you're able to make some of that money back, which allows you to keep investing in renewables, right? Mm-hmm. If you're you know, someone that made a renewable energy project, that's probably what you want to do, right? So the more profitable we can make you, that's great, right? I want all, you know, renewable energy, you know, innovation and startups to be profitable so that it will continue, right, and get bigger. Right. That's what we should all want.
No, 100%. That was one of those I didn't think about. I'm like, huh, yeah. Because a couple of my neighbors have solar, and they got those panels that tell you when you use and right. You don't use and when it sells and all that. And yeah. One of them actually looked and it was roughly the same time frame. For us, it's more like 9 to 11, but same concept. And they're like, yeah, I made all this and it went to the grid, but I didn't get money. I'm like, because no one used it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the grid, you know, we have the grid is all legacy infrastructure, right? So it's very hard to integrate with the grid. And it's very hard to, like I said, you know, storing energy is a big, big problem. It's that, you know, if you want to know why Tesla has become so, so valuable, you know, as a stock, as a company, it's not the cars, right? It's kind of this play that they have on batteries, right? Storage of energy, because it's a massive problem. And, you know, one way to solve it is to use it in an alternative way, you know, where you can make money from it while also participating in the future of money, right? Crypto. So I think that's pretty cool. And I think it's something I really try and explain to people, because like I said, I want people to be informed in this debate, right? Because we're going to keep having this debate, right? Yeah. We're going to keep debating, you know, is crypto a good use of energy, and particularly Bitcoin? You know, most other crypto assets crypto networks don't use the same sort of mechanism that Bitcoin do. And that makes them a lot, you know, cleaner. Like, you don't have to expend tons and tons of computing power all the time. So, you know, for instance, next year, Ethereum is planning to move to, a different, what we call consensus algorithm that will, put a kibosh on, you know, high energy usage in that network, because you'll no longer have to expend tons of computing power. Instead, you will use a different process called staking, where you're just kind of putting up your coins. And it's a lot lighter weight, right? But Bitcoin will remain on its kind of what we call proof of work mechanism, where you have to expend lots of energy. And, you know, I think that's actually important because I do think it's important for us to have at least one network that has this type of security model, right? Where, which is really, really robust, right? If you know, Bitcoin has never been hacked
right? In the close to 12 years that it's been operational, right? It's never been hacked. And this is why, right? So if you think that's valuable to have a system of money that is unhackable, right? I think it's very valuable and that you can use, you know, without anyone's permission, then, you know, then it's a good use of energy, right? I don't think that Christmas lights are a good use of energy, right? That I think we, you know, Christmas lights use more energy probably than Bitcoin per year. You know, and maybe you can have your lights up during Christmas, you know, that's fine. But guess what? People keep their lights up, you know, half the year, right? Yeah. So I don't think that's a good use of energy, but I'm not going to go and tell people, you know, you can't do this, right? It's, you know, it's a, what is and isn't, you know, a good use of energy is a moral judgment. You know, we don't really have energy police, right, in this country. And I don't think we should.
Yeah.
But it's a debate, you know, that will continue and that we'll keep having. And so that's, I want people to be, you know, at least informed. You don't, you might not agree with me, but I want you to at least be informed on that kind of point of view as it relates to crypto.
Yeah. It was just actually, you touched on something I wanted to ask because I heard Ethereum was forking recently.
Yeah, it did. So it went through something called the London hard fork, which was sort of a minor upgrade. Well, it was a big upgrade, but it was not as big as what I described, you know, this transition to ETH2, which mm-hmm. should occur sometime next year, probably. What happened a week ago or so, about a week and a half ago, is what was called the London hard fork, which was a series of upgrades to Ethereum, some of them very minor. The big one was the change in the burn mechanism, or the introduction of a burn mechanism to Ethereum. So what I mean by that is every time you use Ethereum is like a world supercomputer, right, that anybody can use, right? But to use the computer, you pay, right? You pay for how many resources you use. So the more resources of the computer you use, the more Ether you pay as a transaction fee. Previously, all of that Ethereum that was paid to use the network in fees went to what we call the miners, right? The people that participate, you know, that validate transactions like we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. They got to keep all those fees. And so they were making a lot of money. What this did, what we call EIP 1559, the upgrade that happened, is rather than just pay those fees back to the miners who are already earning Ethereum as a reward for what they do, is to actually burn them, say nobody gets the fees. So every second, right, of every day, there is Ethereum now being burned, right, taken out of circulation permanently. Every time, you know, someone pays a fee to use the network, a portion of that gets permanently destroyed.
But wouldn't it be eventually a supply imbalance? There's not enough.
So
Ethereum.
There's still Ethereum being created.
Okay.
So every time we call a block is every time transactions are added to the network by a miner, they get a reward, which is in new Ether. Okay. So that creates natural supply inflation for Ether. But now we also have a competing mechanism that burns Ether. Okay. So right now, still more Ether is being created than is being burned. Previously, you know, it was only being created. Now there's a portion being burned. It may in the future become deflationary, right? What you're describing, where there will be actually more Ether burned than is created. And so the supply overall will go down. And that, you know, you can imagine what that might do to the price of Ether.
Oh, yeah. And it's like short supply like that, that's good. But it was just one of those thinking. Okay, here's a side technical question. Mm-hmm. If I buy the original Ether, not the hard fork London one.
Well, they are the same.
Those are the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
then never mind. To answer that question.
You can only buy because it was, you know, they called it a hard fork, but, you know, the whole network, you know, kind of moved over to it. So there's no like other coin that was created as a result. Like when there was a fork called Ether Classic. So if you've seen, you know, a coin called Ethereum Classic, mm-hmm. that was kind of, you know, years ago, there was some sort of problem with Ethereum and there was a disagreement about what to do. And so they went in different directions and Ether Classic was kind of the old school guys that were like, we don't want to change anything. And what we, you know, call Ethereum is the, you know, version that's kind of continued to evolve and improve. So Ethereum, it did not have a similar type of fork as that, where there was a new coin created that like branched off.
It's still just Ether.
Okay. That's what I was just curious about. Cause, I actually had a 17-year-old. Yeah. It was just one of those. I had a 17-year-old come on and he was explaining the same thing, but essentially he's like, he was explaining how mining is profitable, but he's like, you only want to do Ether Classic because there's only so many miners kind of thing. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. I'm like, I get it. Kind of.
Yeah, there are far less miners on Ethereum Classic because it's a smaller network, not as many people use. You know, and if you want to mine that, you can. You'll earn Ether Classic. I think I would rather earn Ether.
Ether itself?
Personally, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was just one of those, like, he brought up good points too. And that's where I didn't fully pull the trigger and make a Coinbase again, but it was just one of those, I'm like, it just sounds a little too good to be true. Kind of thing that he's promising these ridiculous returns on running your computer 4 hours a day. I'm like, mm-hmm. It's a little too good to be true kind of thing.
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, so mining isn't something I do. I'm more of an investor.
Right.
But you know, mining is, is a thing, and I actually explained it. I have a video in my course about it. If you do want to mine, like what you have to consider, and there's a lot of, things that the main ones, just to be kind of brief, is, you need to know what are your energy costs?
Mm-hmm.
What's the coin that you're mining? How much of it you're going to be able to mine with your hardware setup. Okay. And you can find that out. There are calculators online that are free that you can use. You can say, here's the hardware I have. And it'll say, here's what you can mine. And you can put in your energy cost and it'll say, and you can know, if you're going to be profitable or not, right? You also have to make some assumptions about, the price of the coin, because that's going to determine your profitability as well. Mining is a legitimate, thing to do. It can be a great source of passive income, like I was saying. It's not totally passive, but it's, once you have it set up, it really is. Yeah, it could be, sometimes there are great returns you can earn from mining, certain coins. And once again, there are kind of calculators online and resources online that I share, in the course, that make that, really easy to kind of figure out.
Okay. Yeah. That was just the only one that when he was saying all that, I'm like, that's too good. If that's the case, then we'd all quit our job and just be mining Ether for Ether Classic for like 4 hours a day.
Yeah, well, the way it works, right, is the more people that start mining, the harder it gets to mine, and so the profitability will go down. So there's this natural market mechanism when it's really profitable to mine, more people start mining, and then that pushes kind of the profitability down. And so it, usually stays in a reasonable, like it still is profitable, otherwise people wouldn't do it. But you constantly have this kind of push and pull, right, of the market, figuring out, deciding, how many miners there are going to be, right? And as the price of Ether goes up, right, guess what? It's going to become more profitable to mine. So there are going to be more miners, which will make it harder to mine, okay, which will push profitability kind of back down. And what happens in net is the network just gets bigger and more powerful, right, and more decentralized. So it's good.
So then I'm curious, we touched on NFTs earlier. I want to hear your take, and then kind of like a add to, where do you see the crypto market itself? Is it still in its infancy, or is it now kind of growing and we just don't see it yet?
I'd say both. It is both in its infancy and growing.
Okay.
And typically, it's come in cycles, right? So you'll have, this sort of 4 year cycle of, 2 years of kind of, big expansion, which I think we're in now. And then maybe another 2 years of bear market of kind of contraction, right? And coming back down to earth a little bit. But, every time it does that, it finds a higher floor, right? Because there are more people that have become involved. There's more that's been built, right? There's more value that's been created. So as long as we keep creating value, the market is just going to expand. And I do think it's very early still. The fact of the matter is, right, 99% of people aren't using this still, mm-hmm. right? 99% of people aren't doing a lot of the things I talked about in terms of, holding crypto for passive income, using crypto productively, using these different applications that are on the crypto internet, right? So it is very early, definitely. Now, when it comes to NFTs, NFTs are even earlier, in fact, but they have made a lot of progress this year. So this is something actually the whole industry was really excited about years ago. And like with a lot of things, it was kind of overhyped in the short term and underhyped in the long term, right? So we were really excited about it in like 2018, and then stuff wasn't happening. People sort of forgot about it. And then this year it started getting, you know, a lot of the companies that had been building finally had good products and started adding value. And all of a sudden there was this explosion, right? So what is an NFT, right? If you might not know, an NFT stands for a non-fungible token. So in contrast to something like Bitcoin or Ethereum, where every token is like another token, right? You don't kind of differentiate which kind of token you have. That's called fungibility, right? Non-fungible tokens are all unique. So every non-fungible token is different. And what they can be used for, and in this way, it's sort of like a fingerprint, right? Because every, it's like a snowflake. Everyone's different. So you can create a fingerprint with using an NFT for really anything, right? And usually it's used to represent art or some sort of unique real world object, maybe a luxury watch or a bottle of wine, or even, you know, real estate, right? All these sort of different things, right, can be made into NFTs. And so what do you get? You make it an NFT. Well, now you can use it on the crypto internet of value. Right? And I keep saying this internet of value, right? What I mean is, right, you know, this internet where we can natively send value, just like we natively send information on the current internet, right? Mm-hmm. You type up an email, you send it to someone, or you make a tweet, you know, you send it out, right? And you send information for free without anyone's permission. But you can do the same thing with money on the crypto internet of value. So when you have these NFTs allow you to create representations of art, of music, of other real world items, and then utilize them on the internet of value, build applications around them, be able to trade them, you know, transparently send them around. And there's all sorts of incredible stuff you can do, right? For instance, one great example is, you know, for artists, right? If you're an artist and maybe you make some digital art, right? And you want to sell that, right? Typically, you'd have to figure out how to enforce copyright and how to get paid. And then how do you get paid if it gets resold? Usually you don't, right? But now with NFTs, artists are creating, you know, their art as NFTs. They're selling them directly to an audience, to their audience, right? Without needing to pay really anyone in the middle. Right? They're selling directly to the audience. And then they can even, because you can program these NFTs, right? Mm-hmm. You can even create a mechanism where you automatically get royalties for secondhand sales, right? So I know an artist that did a recent, you know, drop, right? A recent collection. And not only did they make money from selling the NFTs initially, but every time one of them is resold, they get a percentage of it, right? Automatically. And that's really, really powerful.
That was another thing I wanted to ask, because it sounds like you really got to know your coding to make an NFT work.
So not necessarily. So, you know, there are platforms that have, right, tried to make this very easy. So if you're interested, you know, you should check out OpenSea, you should check out something like Nifty Gateway, right? Rarible, Super Rare. There are a bunch of them now, right? Where they will let you mint an NFT, right, on the platform, and they'll make it easy for you, right? So where you don't really have to know code. Now, if you want to do a more advanced sort of drop, like what my friend did, then you might want to hire a Solidity developer. But, you know, if you are, you know, I also know artists that haven't gone that route and they just use OpenSea and they are able to, you know, create NFTs and then list them on the marketplace without knowing any coding at all.
So when they, let's say I'm on OpenSea right now, they create it. Let's say they make a whatever painting. So they just make the initial income. They don't have it set up for residual, right?
Well, you can set it up for residual. So you'll get the original income from the sale. And then every time the piece or pieces are resold on that marketplace, you will earn, you'll earn a percentage.
Right. Royalties. Like, yeah, it was the one guy that initially introduced it to me on his show. He minted his whatever show for the podcast, and he said it to like every time it's resold, he gets 20% of it, kind of thing.
Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah. But that's where he's like, I was trying to code it, and this is my like 10th try. Hopefully this works then now.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm sure he would tell you it's worth it.
Oh yeah. I'm assuming because like his following is hardcore into tech. So they're probably like, no, I want his episode. No, I want it, kind of thing.
Yeah. That's good.
You got something coming up?
Huh? Oh, no. I was just also looking at OpenSea.
Yeah, it was.
You can get lost in that stuff. You can, you know, look at art on there for hours.
Yeah. That's interesting. So we've gone over the basics, the stable way of investing for Bitcoin. Mike, the thing that keeps coming up, and this is where I know decentralized, but there's a centralized component. Mm-hmm. How does taxes play in all this? Because let's say you earn 9% weekly, mm-hmm. but because you converted to a different coin and then cashed it out, do you still owe taxes on that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Because the government's going to make its money.
Yeah. Definitely really important question, right? For people to understand. The truth is, it's actually pretty easy. So passive income, like what you described, mm-hmm. like what we talked about, is taxed as regular income, right? So you'll pay taxes on it. Same as what you pay, you know, on your salary. So whatever tax bracket your salary puts you in, right, you'll pay kind of that same rate on the passive income. And for instance, the app that we were talking about, Celsius Network, they actually send you the tax form, right? So they have that all available to you. They'll send you a 1099. You can put it straight into like TurboTax, right? And okay. It's super easy. Now for crypto, for investing, because I'm sure people are curious about this too, it actually works very similar to how like the stock market would work, which is, you know, when you buy something, you have a cost basis. If you sell it within a year, you have a short-term gain or short-term loss. If you sell it in more than a year, right, you'll have a long-term gain. And so that's taxed differently. So it works the same way. The only kind of difference to note is that if you sell one crypto for another crypto, like if you sell Bitcoin to get Ethereum, that's still a taxable event, right?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So it's like basically how it's treated is it's like you sold Bitcoin for US dollars and then use those US dollars to buy Ethereum. So the price of Bitcoin at the time you buy it and the price of Ethereum at the time you trade for it, right, becomes your exit point, you know, your short-term or long-term gain, and then your new cost basis for the new asset.
Okay. Now, I'm very curious, because it sounds like you're very well-versed in it. I've heard of people starting like Roth accounts and putting their wallet in the Roth account. Mm-hmm. Is it the same as like stocks and other stuff like that?
Yeah, that's starting to be a lot more accessible. In fact, I was doing a consultation with someone yesterday that has been doing that, right? They set up an IRA, they set up even like a trust company for it, and they're going to use the IRA to invest in crypto, which I think is smart to do because you want to have your most volatile, kind of riskiest assets in your IRA because... Mm-hmm. Those are going to be the ones that, you know, might appreciate the most. So you'll save the most taxes on it. And it'll also increase your IRA account, which is your non-taxable money, which is great, right? So when you look at like Peter Thiel, right? Peter Thiel's IRA is like $5 billion.
Something right? like that, yeah.
But the maximum contribution amount in IRA is like $6,000, right? So how the hell did he get $5 billion? Well, he put all of his riskiest assets into the IRA, and when they did really well, he compounded that. And now he has, you know, an insane amount of money that can't be taxed, and that's huge, right? Now we can argue maybe, you know, as a billionaire, he should be paying taxes on that money. But, you know, for the rest of us, right, I think it's a great strategy, you know, and you can, I believe... for instance, like on Kraken, if you set it up correctly, right, you can buy a bunch of different crypto assets and put them in your IRA.
Yeah, that was the biggest one. I was just thinking, I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I'd like to set up the interest thing and just try to figure out how to get into a Roth account. But mm-hmm. might not be one of those. It's a situation yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say, you know, don't procrastinate it if you want to do it. I think it's a good idea. I think the number one, I always say that the number one enemy of opportunity is procrastination.
Yep.
And you know, we've all experienced that. Nobody's perfect, but, you know, crypto is a massive opportunity. Hopefully I have, you know, communicated that and helped you to understand that. And I think it's worth the time. It's worth the time to understand it. It's worth the time to, you know, set up a good way for you to invest in it, whether that's an IRA or something else. You know, I'm here to be a resource, right? I'm just here to help. I'm here to help, you know, I want you to be confident, you know, when you do this stuff. I don't want you to worry. I don't want you to make a costly mistake. And so that's the point of my course. That's what I'm trying to do. I also have lots of free resources on my website, which is roadtobabylon.org. And I do, for instance, a weekly newsletter that, you know, I share a lot of, you know, my thoughts and insights on the market, and on what's going on in crypto. I also have, you know, free consultations that I do. I have, you know, a glossary of terms for people trying to learn crypto. And so those are examples of some good free resources I've put together you can find on the site. And then also, of course, the course, mm-hmm. Which should be coming out in the next month or so, just putting kind of the finishing touches on it. And it'll be really digestible, you know, 5 to 10 minute videos, highly curated, you know, by topic. But it's a lot of stuff. I put a lot of work into it, and, you know, it'll be over 6 hours worth of, you know, good crypto content explained, you know, by me, you know, someone that has worked in the industry, has worked, you know, in building, you know, projects in the tech space, and has been, you know, involved and successful, you know, for a number of years. So I hope people will check it out.
Yeah. And I have a email after this, and it'll pick up all that stuff for you. And then any links that you wanted to add.
Yeah. Sweet.
Been an absolute honor and a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. So when is it going to?
Well, congratulations. You made it to the end. You're a awesome person. Not many make it here. So being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? App, if you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations, you're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel, change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome, and see you next time.